Right, hi everybody, and welcome to another Real Antiques podcast. I'm over with Mark Jameson, and he's Trinity Marine, which is a huge company that's been going for 40 odd years. He's going to talk you through. It's basically nautical, really interesting. He has some amazing pieces come in and out, you know, every week. So, Mark, just if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Thanks, Ed.
And just talk about your business.
Thanks, Ed. Yeah, welcome everybody. We are Trinity Marine. We're down in sunny Devon, and as Ed has said, we've been going for 40 years. It hasn't always been nautical salvage. In fact, we were scrapping all at the very beginning. We were buying gear direct out of the Ministry of Defence. My old man spotted that the Navy gear was just by far superior to everything else. The Army stuff's disposable, designed to go into battle, not come back out. The aeroplane cool was cool. The aeroplane gear was cool, but it was all aluminium and rivets. The Navy, the Royal Navy, and we're going back to a time when 10 pence of every pound was spent on the Royal Navy. We were buying an awful amount of surplus material out of the MOD. And I didn't really pay attention at school because I was coming out to the best job in the world. These auctions were all a big fiddle, really. It felt a bit Robin Hood at the time. So, by the time I left school, as I walked into work, my old man announced to me that it's all over because the Navy just shrank like that, and with that went the quantities of gear. Now that's the quantities is sort of been the pattern of our businesses over the sort of 40, 50 years. We've dealt with quantities and in places that sort of restrict other people from being able to do it. When there's small quantities of anything, as you know, anybody can have a go at it. When I came to work 20 odd years ago, it was the end of scrapping the stuff. We were just throwing it in the scrap. So I said to my old man, you know, well, let's start, if the gear's getting rarer, let's start polishing it up and we'll see how that goes. And that worked. You know, the remaining stock we had at that time, we were polishing up and presenting it, whether it's portholes, beacons and telegraphs, all that stuff that I'll talk you through later. But and then my father, in true entrepreneurial spirit, opened the paper one day and he saw that the Canberra, obviously P&O ship that was famous for taking the troops down to Falklands, she was getting scrapped in Karachi. And so we got on a plane and went. And being with our roots in the scrap business, obviously seeing one of the biggest scrap yards in the world, and these in Pakistan at that time, there were, I think, 60, 70 ships on the beach, all run up the beach. I mean, some of these ships, we've all seen big ships at a port or at sea, but I can't describe to you the size and the magnitude of them when they're out of the water on the beach. So we were in heaven at that point, and we stripped a lot of stuff out of the Canberra. She was quite modern. Ironically, she was quite a modern ship. And so there wasn't all we knew was brass and bronze. So we only got some gear off Canberra because it was a bit late, a lot of aluminium and a Knight Rider steering wheel. But the Pakistanis there were so, they could see how excited we were about being there. So they said, look, if you think this is cool, you want to go down to India because there's 150 ships on the beach down there and another 100 waiting to come in. So we flew back to Abu Dhabi, flew straight back to Bombay at the time, and up to Gujarat, drove up to Gujarat, and found the world's biggest scrapyard. And that there, it was true. There was 150 ships on the beach. And at that time, there were a lot of, the fire regs had just changed on the ships. So any of the mid-century swan song of British shipbuilding ships that were left in the world were getting run up the beach at the same time. A lot of them were ocean liners. You know, proper ocean liners. There's a big difference between an ocean liner, transatlantic travel, and today's passenger ships. So some of today of what I'm going to be talking to you about is trying to explain or convey that there's a lot more to nautical than Seaside Pub. You know, so there we were on board these beautiful floating sculptures of ocean liners, and they're floating hotels. But not only that, they're the most sort of stylish, glamorous, no expense spared. The marquetry, the furniture, even the coat hooks, the silverware, everything was the very, very best, you know? I mean, ocean liners and ships in general are so incredibly difficult and expensive to refit or redecorate. They threw the best guy at it. You know, whoever won the award in Paris that year for best designer got the job for the ship being built at that time. So I didn't know at that point who Gio Ponti was, or I didn't know who a lot of the top designers were, but I soon did, you know, and we started to strip these ships of whole contents. Other people have tried it, but not on the scale that we'd done it. The ship owners over there have bought these ships for 12, 15 million quid. So our 50, 100 grand meant nothing to him, you know, money. So there were other people that wanted to buy the first class dining room wall sconces. But we would say to the ship owner, ship breaker, we'd say, look, we'll take the 30 tons of teak, the 100 doors, the 1,000 lights, the 2 tons of monogram DPNS by Mapping and Web. But we want those first class wall sconces as well. You know, that's what it was all about. And I think that's why
getting that deal, I suppose.
Making the bill large enough to impress them and get some sense out of them. But you know, there's a few reasons why there's not many people do what we do, and one of them is it's physically still is, but it was very physically dangerous to do what we used to do. Not just the asbestos and the PCBs and all that, but just you're working on a ship that could technically be on fire at any moment and you wouldn't know anything about it. But also financially dangerous, you know, doing business in those days, if you didn't pay up front, it didn't get loaded. It takes 3 months to get the gear off the ship. I've used agents over there who've become like family to me over the last 20 years. So long story short, you give somebody 50 grand and go home. And you wait 3, 4, 5 months, and it's not until you open the container doors that you know whether you've made a cock up or not. Yeah.
Yeah. There's that element of trust, isn't there? And that was sort of like the oldest way of dealing. You know, you don't get a lot of that anymore.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's still intact in some of these countries, is they expect you to trust them, basically.
Yeah. And that's where. And that's where most people get their trousers pulled down over there, to be honest, Ed. I mean, and that's where our roots in the scrap business and basic, sensible, fair trading. We have a great reputation for just being straight. If we do a deal, it's done. Win, lose, or draw. And I know that other people that had tried it back in those days, there were some Americans, there was all sorts of people that had a little go over there, but they'd, you know, and I've had this impersonated to me by my friends over there. They put a foot on the chair and point a cigar around and go, I'll have that, I'll have that, I'll have that. I mean, that's music to their ears over there. You won't win doing it like that. But we were from the scrap business. We had calluses on our hands at that point. Don't anymore. And so we had our difficult learning curve. You know, we absorbed a lot of mistakes. It was big volume stuff. I've got a big mistakes department in the back of the yard, like everybody else. But we applied a high turnover, low profit approach to it. All those ocean liners dried up eventually. I wish I had all that gear again. You know, it's the same old cliche story. You had all the best gear at the wrong time. But we've reinvented ourselves under the same genre again and again every sort of 10 years. The industrial trend came along just at the point when the last ocean liner disappeared, which meant I could strip oil tankers and cargo ships the sort of ships that we used to turn our nose up at. I went on an oil tanker and saw that the designs, which is, I mean, I'm kicking myself now for thinking anything any different, because that is one of the that is part of the essence of marine, is that a lot of these fixtures and fittings were designed to death by the 1920s, you know, the caged lights and all of that. They were drawn to death and designed perfectly 100 years ago. So the designs never changed, but the material did. So it went from brass to aluminium to iron and all of that. So, yeah. But at the beginning, at the very beginning, it was just a commodity to me. But in the process of marketing it, selling it, finding the people around the world that love it and are grateful for you supplying it, I was, you know, like a customer would buy that, and I bought it for 10, or I want 15 quid. They'd buy that, and then they'd say, yeah, but Mark, do you know why they were made like that? And the nuances of what the design was all about. And God, it's so, so deep. You know, I was guilty of it like everybody else, of just sort of glancing at it and thinking, oh yeah, it's good, but I don't really, you know, not that enamored by it. But the more I learned about it in the early days,
until people actually
fell in love with the whole thing.
Until people really show you the appreciation for it as well, it just doesn't sink in, does it? That the design that went into craftsmanship that went into these items as well. Yeah. And it almost sometimes takes that person, one of your good clients, customers, just to say, well, the reason why I'm buying it is this. And you thought, oh, right, okay. Yeah, yeah. And then you learn to appreciate it.
My customers taught me everything. Yeah. The customers taught me everything. And that's marine. You know, especially we salvage from oil and gas, warships, ocean liners. We're talking like blank checkbook approach to materials, design, and craftsmanship. You know, the best guys, the best bronzes, and the most, apart from the ocean liners, that's a different ball game. We're talking about the most gorgeous interiors you can possibly imagine. But generally speaking, marine stuff was never designed to, it's 100% function, you know? There was no form in, the form was irrelevant, but most strong marine design, harping back hundreds of years, 50, tens of years, they are gorgeous, with no intention of them being decorative looking. And that's just proof that if you throw an unlimited amount of money towards the design development and then the materials of it, because it's got to live in the harshest conditions on the planet. And of course, those old ships that we were breaking 25, 30 years ago, they were from the days of when ships were built with a 40, 50 year lifespan involved, you know. Unlike everything else in the world, ships being built now have got a 20-year lifespan, you know, and a 15-year lifespan. So the quality's gone down. We can't get the gear like we used to, but we are busy using all of our experience and knowledge and passion in the subject to come out with new lines and show people things that they haven't seen before or would never have thought of.
Do you mainly supply it to, do you mainly supply to then, Mark? Do you do a lot of interior
good
design,
question,
shop fittings, that sort of thing?
I get asked that a lot, and I've never been able to put my finger on any one category. We genuinely do it all. Private collectors, interiors. Well, I will say, especially where the lighting's concerned and some of the fixtures and fittings, where there's one on a ship, there's 100, if not more. So we'll buy the 100. And what that does is that gives us the ability to supply larger chains with quantities of an original reclaimed item. So you can go to 100 places in the country and buy 5 lights the same. But we're one of the very few that can do 55 and a 65 and a 75. And if you open up another one in Greenwich, or if you open another one in Leicester, we can do the same in there, you know? So we deliberately stock volume for that reason, and we deliberately stock volume in order to still apply this high turnover, low profit thing. We've got to compete with manufactured stuff. There's loads of copies out there. Some of them are quite good. But it's never been more important than now to be competitive with the reproduction stuff. You know, people have always known that, oh, Trinity Marine's passageway light, it's twice as much as the repro one, but it's 10 times better, you know. But we've brought, especially even now, we've brought our prices down where we can, even lower and lower, just to people have only, some people have only got 50 quid to put on that outdoor light, you know. And, you know, it's tough going out there for all of us, for all the obvious reasons. So we like to think that we raise eyebrows with our prices, you know. Some of the shows we do, you can see people walking over to a price tag. When they turn it over, there's almost, you can see it whirring away in their head. Oh shit, we can buy it. You know, they've admired it, they
Yeah,
loved
that's what
it,
you
and they
want.
thought, they were almost hoping that it was too expensive. And then it was like, oh shit, we can afford this. But
Gonna have to buy it now,
that's the
basically.
business. Yeah, that's right. There's disappointment.
But that shows you as the business that you are, where you're forever evolving, and now you're catering for people who want that sustainability and that quality, which is what you're going to get from something that's reclaimed from these boats, you know. So yeah, it's
That's
just an
right. And
evolution
I
in
know it.
your.
I know it's not just exclusive to marine stuff, because you could apply it a lot to especially the reclamation and salvage and reclamation area. But I've got enormous stocks in my shed over there. Whilst the ships were being broken, I stocked up because they were going to go, and they have done. But nobody will ever make that gear again. The fixtures and fittings. It'll take a while to sell some of it. I've got 600 ships brass windows. It'll be my sons selling them, not me. But nobody will ever make them again, you know. And I think there's a lot to be said for that. It's I know things go out of fashion and in fashion and out of fashion, but a lot of our stock, the backup stock we have, a lot of stuff in here, it's beyond trend, you know. It's timeless, trendless stuff. And the worse things get now, you know, in terms of mass production, the less soul in them, the less warmth. I think people are, you know, I think it came to a head about 10 years ago, where people sort of started to walk into their homes and thinking, hang on, you know, this looks smart, but what's missing? You know, there's something missing. And that's quality. You know, that's quality. That has that sort of presence and warmth to it. And that's paved the way, not just for us, but salvage and reclamation in general.
Well, it's so sustainable, isn't it, Mark? You know, it's going to last as well. It's already actually done its time as well. It's going to last. Some of these pieces, like what you say, especially with the metal pieces, because of the use of metal and how much it's running out all around the world, they're not going to be making brass and copper items like what they used to, are they?
They're not, mate. They've stopped a long time ago. It's gone from brass, aluminium, iron, and it's plastic now. The ships that the two out of three ships we're working on at the moment, it's all plastic, or it's office lighting. And as you say, you know, in terms of lasting, I do harp on about our lights. It is what pays our wages, the lighting business here, and the rest of it goes when it wants to, and it's the cherry on the cake. The antiques is a passion of mine, the collectibles is a passion of mine, but the lights is the main part of the business. And in terms of an outdoor light near the sea or in the middle of the country, doesn't matter, but the lights will last longer than all of us put together. And I use that as an example, because I think we've all got an outdoor light somewhere that was new a few years ago that looks like it's had a, you know, that's had a hard life, like me.
It's very true. Very true. So, Mark, you've got some bits. You got some bits in the background there. Are these the bits that you keep for your sort of self? Are they? These
this
are
is
more
my,
specialist
no. This
bits.
Is my bedroom.
Do you have a room that.
This is my bedroom. I thought it's the quietest place here. No, yeah, this is the corner of. We've got huge showrooms here. We have got big showrooms. It was a bit of a challenge to decide where we'd do it today. This is a creamy bit for the antiques and sort of where the purists tend to gravitate towards when they come. You asked me to show you something from an inventory today. It was spoiled for choice, really. And in here, there's ironically, that campaign chest is the only thing that's not nautical in here. The figureheads are all genuine. We don't do I guess we have done. I guess there's a place for it. If I do buy something that's a replica, it sounds better than repro, then it's been made right and it's good. But the figureheads are 100% original, all provenance, all genuine. In fact, I think I've just done a deal on all of those at the moment somewhere special. The beacon I've pulled out from the side, it normally lives here. That I pulled that out, one, because it harks back when we were saying where we came from. The only bit I missed out earlier on was at the very end of our scrap dealings, we bought all of the boy beacons, the copper boy lanterns that were all painted red. We bought, as Trinity House moved from gas to solar, they replaced all of these lanterns. And we bought, I think, 670 out of the Trinity House. And I remember when we unloaded them all here in the yard, me and my dad were propped up against the forklift and we're just looking at this sea of beacons, all shapes and sizes. This is a middle-sized one, medium-sized. And I remember looking at all that. We thought we better come up with a business name here if we're going to get into this. And that's where Trinity Marine came from. It was no real brainwave. But we're called Trinity Marine because of that first big deal we did with Trinity House. And the beacon has become our logo. And another reason I've pulled it out is because it's proof of what I was saying earlier. Now, if you spend a couple of hours here in the showrooms, you'll start to see the difference in quality between things that are from the merchant navy, cargo ships, oil tankers, etc., and then the Royal Navy. There's a stark difference in quality. The merchant navy is amazing quality, but then the Royal Navy is like Rolls Royce stuff. But then if you spend long enough here and you see I've got incredible glass, huge glass, first order, second order, third order lighthouse lenses that are works of art in their own right. Not designed to be. But these beacons were used to mark outcrops of rock, shallow water, wrecks. They stood on top of a big, big floating buoy, big cage, and that famous sort of bell that's sort of, when you hear one of those Trinity House bells, you don't have to have any salt water in you to know it's the sound of the sea. They're awesome. But if that gas light goes out inside that lamp, then the oil tankers and the Royal Navy hit the rocks, you know, and people die, or worse, you lose cargo, you know, that's the way it was. So they were designed in the 1910s like that. If that light goes out, it's bad news. So it's got to operate in force 10, worst conditions on the planet. And so it's made of bronze and copper for obvious anti-salt water reasons. But at no point they were made like that in 1910. The design didn't change until sort of 1980. So it was drawn to death. And at no point did the designer of that get a tap on the shoulder going, right, well done, John. You've got this working in the harshest conditions on the planet and that light's never going to go out. Well done. Can you now make it look nice? You know, it's It's a sculpturally elegant, beautiful thing. I don't think I'm being biased. I know I'm not being biased.
Definitely not.
Because we send them all around the world. We send them all around the world to incredible places. Not just incredible places, you know, they're pretty accessible. We're down to our last 10 pieces from the 670 that we had. But like I said, it's sort of proof. I deliberately chose that because it's part of our history. It's got a history, it's got beauty, and it's got a use, you know. I can take, by the way, you don't have to have a red lens in it if you're a little bit sensitive to neighbors seeing a red light in your window. That's optional. Yeah. It's removable.
Just explain, Mark, just explain to the people that are just listening, because to me it's the red's the most amazing color as well. It's just a beautiful thing. Yeah. So how, go on, okay, just do your sale of it to the people listening.
That's okay. Yeah, so a boy beacon. This is a 200 mil. They go 100s, 120s, 200s, 300s, 500s. The 200 mil corresponds to the diameter of the Fresnel lens inside it. That's what they call it. They're made by the famous Swedish company Aga. The 200 are 3 foot tall, and they have that. And I say iconic. I'll come back to that in a minute. They have triangular sections of glass. With a copper bonnet and a heavy brass base, about 80 kilos. And it's a very, very heavy duty housing for what is quite a weak light source inside, which again, if it goes out, everybody's in the shit. But the Fresnel lens inside, cut glass, hand made by Chance Brothers, Birmingham. And again, the Fresnel lens, I could bore you with that. You know, what an incredible, nobody thinks twice about a Fresnel lens. Why would they? It's a ship's lamp in a pub. But what an incredible evolutionary step in design, you know, in terms of turning quite a weak light source into something that can be seen 5 miles away. So it's, I say iconic because it's almost like one of the diving helmets. If you ask somebody on the street, you'd be surprised. I think to draw a deep sea boy beacon, I think you'd be surprised how many people could draw it and even get the sort of triangles right. You know, it's one of those things that you don't think much about, but it's ingrained in your subconscious as to being an important thing. Obviously, yachtsmen and fishermen, you know, think very romantically of them because it's a very important part of their navigation. But that's about as best way.
Well, They always seem to be in oil paintings as well, or photos or pictures, yeah, don't they?
They're there. Yeah, they're there.
Yeah, they're there.
And yeah. in marine, there's loads of different subcategories: navigation, ocean liner, Royal Navy, scientific, figureheads and carvings, models, etc., etc., etc. But lighthouse and the boys and lighthouse stuff is my personal favorite. There's larger sections of the internal of the lenses from inside proper lighthouses, not the boys, that, again, they're just too big to get up in this space. You'd have to look at our website or our YouTube videos to see them. But they do a much better job with one image of some of the lighthouse lenses. They do a much better job than me trying to convey how magical they are. It's just breathtaking how beautiful they are.
So you touched on that there. So people can go and look at all of your gear, Mark, can't they? They can go on your website, and then you also do a YouTube channel and you do a blog as well. Is that right?
We do it all, Ed. We do it all like we've got to. I say got to because we are down in South Devon. We are out in the countryside. People always come up this valley after getting a bit lost and they say, oh, why are you here? You know, I say, well, you know, Devon's a beautiful place to live. And to be honest, we're were tucked away in this valley, because in the old days we used to get up to all sorts of mischief, so we didn't see, want to see anybody see what we're up to. But we do have a really good, and I'd say that anyway, of course, but we have a good website, always have done, early adopters. First website was 1996. We've got a very good website, but you said it, they can see it all. No, the website's really big. There's an enormous amount of material on it, but it's less than 10% of what we got. So very quickly on that, if I always say to any customers that I meet far away, have a look at the website. If you see something that you like, but it's the wrong shape, size or color, but it's inspired you, then email us and let us know. And then we'll do the shopping here, you know. And YouTube channel, yeah, we're doing that now. We've always do a nice monthly newsletter that we take pride in. We have started to do YouTube videos where we follow the restoration of something special, because we know that that's interesting to people. It interests me. I get it. So the YouTube channel is important. A good, healthy amount of followers in there. And there's a blog and our Instagram. I think our Instagram's good because it gives a real slice, a bit of everything that we do. I think, you know, we're all short of time, and time is a sensitive issue for everybody these days. And I think our YouTube conveys not just a sort of mix of what we do, but how we do it. You know, there's a good reason why we're good at what we do. It's because we love it. I mean, like, we really love it, and we like people. Yeah. I guess I say we. There's some people in the office that don't like people very much, but I love people. I love travel. I love this stuff. As proof of that, right, I've got gear tucked away on the other side. I don't know whether I'm the only person who does this. I don't think I am, because I do meet other people that are just a bit weird like me. But I hide stuff until I meet somebody in the showrooms that tell me their pedigree and what their nautical fascination is, or what ship they were on, or what ship their granddad was on. And I hide stuff until I meet somebody that deserves it. I'll go, oh, your granddad was on the da-da-da. I say, come and have a look at this then. You know, because if I just pull it, put it in the showroom and put the price on that I'm going to, it could sell to anybody. I don't want that.
That's great, Mark.
So yeah, we love it.
That is so good. Yeah, that is so good to do that, because it will just make someone as well, if they've found a piece that, you know, their granddad was the ship.
Some of the
on,
is it's you know, some really of the best would. Things are the small little things. Yeah. Some of the best things are the 20, 30, 40 quid stuff. The most evocative. You know, it's not all about the bell off the ship or the tread plate or the da da da. It could be the gravy boat, it could be the sign from the purser's office door. You know, we did an amazing ship called the RMS Windsor Castle years ago. She was the best ship we ever did, because she was completely untouched. Most of the ships get refitted to death by the time they get sold on a few times. The Windsor Castle was Latsis's, the Greek shipping tycoon's, favorite ship. He kept her as his private yacht, practically. 25,000 ton ship. And if you meet anybody from South Africa or any link with South Africa, and you mention to them the Windsor Castle, they normally, 9 times out of 10, go a bit rosy-eyed and then to tell you the story about how they emigrated there, or their dad was on there, and I was conceived on there, or whatever. And I definitely hide some of that stuff until I meet the right guy, and I go, and I give things to people. You know, if they've, we've got a slight problem here in the showrooms where it's so enormous. Well aware of this, we're trying to make it better all the time, but it's overwhelming. I think if you met 100 people that have been here, I think 99 would say it's amazing. I've never seen anything like it in the world, but it's overwhelming. So the website and Instagram and YouTube and the newsletters in particular are a great way of actually not getting snow blindness from all this stuff. This is quite a nice decluttered area. That, oh my God, I look around here. I feel for my customers. I doing up a house last year, and for the first time ever, I was in a position where I could have any, I needed some lights for my house. And for the first time, I was in the position that the public are in when they come in. And I could have anything I wanted. And even I was just like, Jesus Christ, I have no idea which one I want. So we're making a lot of effort to make the show.
It's too much.
It's big, mate. It's big. We're really big. We're the biggest in the world. With no intention of being.
Yeah, that is amazing. Yeah, I mean, it just you talking about it just makes me want to come down and have a look, because it's probably going to be the same sort of emotion for me coming to your place. It's what you got, that emotion of when you went to Pakistan or India and saw those huge ships on that beach. You know? So, which is literally amazing.
Yeah.
So, Mark, what are you up to in the future? You've just recently done Goodwood and Henley, haven't you? I mean, you go out to these shows as well, so you can meet people. You said you love to meet people. Have you got anything planned for the future?
Right. We're in the middle. I've got a screen. Low device storage. I'm on. You still there?
Yeah, still there, still mate. There? Yeah.
Cool.
Yep,
I'm still there. I'm low storage. Good. We've only just started doing shows properly for 2 years. So we're still, can you hear me, by the way? Because there's a window on my screen. Is that all right?
Yeah, no, that's fine. You'll go for it. Yeah, you're all
okay,
good.
Sorry. I'll carry on. Good. We are in the process of finding out which shows work best for us. And I think the only shows that we haven't done and we've got the gear to do it are some of the high marquee sort of antiques fair. I think that's next. But we're doing the rounds. We've got gear for every demographic, every price point. Mm. The lights, as I've said, is a big part of our business, the lighting. So that they're very affordable. So we do everything from county shows to everything from that to Goodwood Revival. But there is talk of the bigger shows, because again, my passion is in the, when I say higher end, it doesn't have to be higher end in terms of price, but the real purist stuff, you know? So I really want to do it.
The stuff that's got soul.
Like that.
The stuff that's got soul, the amazing bits of craftsmanship and things like that, which is great. And when you're out at a show, that's probably the best stuff, obviously, because you get to talk to people about those items as well, don't you? So it's great to sort of get out there and do that. Yeah. No.
There's still a few of us around.
It's come to... Well, I enjoy talking to you at Henley, mate. So there you go.
Likewise. Likewise.
So,
thank
Mark.
You, mate. Thank you.
So, Mark, we're talking about Instagram, we're talking about salvage, this sort of stuff. Is there any accounts or people out there who you follow and you go and have a look on Instagram? Any recommendations in the sort of salvage world?
You know, there's a couple that spring to mind, and as soon as we stop talking, I'll think of 10. But Dan at Norfolk Reclamation always deserves a mention. He's got great taste, great energy. And I think of him first because he's somebody like us who shares an amazing passion for it. Thrifty Jen always pops up on my feed and I'm sort of blown away by that. In terms of nautical stuff, right? Purser's Locker. Mm-hmm. My mate, Purser's Locker, he specializes just in ocean liner stuff, right? If there's anything that, if I could take any one of these genres and specialize in it and live and breathe just one of them, it would be the ocean liner stuff. Jonathan Quayle from the Isle of Wight, he does an incredible job of doing that. So I don't have to bother, you know. And if you look at his Instagram, it helps us because he does a great job as well as we do of conveying, hey, look, this nautical stuff, there's a lot more to it than you think, you know. Gorgeous, exquisite, beautiful history, and something you can use, you know. It's the magic three things. And this year, budget, price is important too.
Yeah, no, well, that's great. And thanks for that, because so people go and check out all of those that Mark has mentioned, because you'll be able to find some great people out there, especially on Instagram. Well, Mark, we've just about come up.
Dan doesn't need a plug. He plugs himself all the time.
Yeah, definitely.
He's loud enough. He didn't need a plug. He's got. He makes a lot of noise.
Yeah, he's great. I enjoy watching what Dan does. He's a lot of fun, especially do. His YouTube and his
TV. He's good for the whole. Yeah. He's good for the whole business. Yeah.
This salvage industry, stick together, plug each other. You know, you're all doing great things because it's all sustainable stuff, basically. So we're, you know, it's helping the environment.
Yeah,
that's the end of it. Anybody who's in the game,
ours is the good. Best stuff, though.
Well, Mark. Yeah, of course, obviously. Well, Mark, thank you. Really appreciated you coming on, mate. And, you know, I hear you with that. Your stuff is absolutely amazing. You know, the craftsmanship, you know, all of this old piece is the metalwork and stuff is literally amazing. I'm going to let you get off and get back to, you know, the acres and acres of salvage that you have there. And
it's mate, been a pleasure
having you on, mate. And then if
likewise.
You could
thanks
just
for having me, Ed.
Finally, just, Mark, just before you go, just finally, just tell everybody your handles, websites, the names of them, your address, postcode, all that, and then we're done, buddy.
Oh, thanks, Ed. And before I do that, just thanks for doing what you're doing. It's all helping a very good trade and a worthwhile cause. Because it's the promotion of this whole thing that we're all doing. You know, we all believe in it and it's all for the right reasons. The sustainability will never be more important than it is now. So yeah, we are Trinity Marine. If you search Trinity Marine on Instagram, Facebook, Google, I think there is another Trinity Marine in America that is some sort of boat something. There is another one somewhere.
Let's not go there. Let's not go to that one.
No, they're not related. That's all right. They do new boats and it makes our stuff look even better. TrinityMarine.co.uk. All right. Trinity Marine on YouTube. Oh, and by the way, we've got some old school videos from the old days on YouTube, which if ever I'm feeling a bit down, I replay them because they're bloody funny. And it just shows how far we've come. And Instagram. Yeah, Instagram's Trinity Marine. Trinity Marine, Trinity Marine, Trinity Marine.